on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, March 19th, 2025 edition of InvestTalk, and it is Fed Day. Happy Fed Day. We will dig into what the Federal Reserve announced today and what implications it could have for markets in the short term in a little bit. But as always, I want to preface this hour for you, and that's what this hour is for. It is for you and your needs, your questions, your concerns, and we mainly address those by answering your finance and investment questions that you bring to the table. So don't hesitate to give us a call at 888-99-CHART. And I'm going to give you perspective and data so that you can take that next step in your own financial journey. That's what this hour is for. And to that end, let's get started. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, let's tackle this caller question first.
So, James, I was trying to call you guys about ticker symbol RMM. That is Sprott's Uranium Miners ETF, and I've had this for quite a while. How does this rate? Is this the ETF to be in within this sector? Should I be looking for something else? Should I be trying to continue to buy more of this? I'm curious your analysis. We really like the show, and we hope you guys have a great day. Thank you. Bye.
Well, we appreciate the call. And looking at the Sprott Uranium Miners ETF, and this is a way to gain exposure to many different miners that are out there. It holds about 36 different names. Okay. Now, it's heavily weighted in the top 10. The top 10 holdings account for 80% of the portfolio. And the top holding is Cameco. That is one that we own for clients. And then you have Kazatomprom, that is another one. They're kind of the two heavyweights within the industry. And then Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, so holding uranium directly through that, that's the third largest holding, about 11%. Kazatomprom is about 17%, Cameco at about 18%. And then you have some smaller miners from there. And I think the generally is a good place to allocate capital too. Now, you did see uranium pull back over the last 6 months or so, but it's starting to gain some life once again. So if you don't want to do the work to find the best risk versus reward in the uranium space, and you want just broad-based exposure, I think this is the name for you. For our clients, we're buying specific uranium and nuclear-related companies, and we find that to be best for our clients. But you know, we have the expertise and the time and the data to run that research. But if you just want broad exposure, this is a good vehicle for that. That's URNM is the symbol, and it's starting to show some life after its recent downturn. Now let's go take a look at the winners for the second day of Market Madness. We're still in round one, but we're heading over to the old economy. And the winners today were Timken Company, TKR. Then we had Marathon Petroleum, Albemarle, which is a big lithium miner. And then we had Antero Resources on top, beating ExxonMobil. You had Carpenter Tech beating Illinois Tool Works. You had Magnolia Oil beating Dow Chemical. You had Emerson Electric beating Schlumberger. And then you had Flowserve beating 3M. So what were some themes today? Well, it was mainly, once again, smaller companies beating out those larger companies overall. And you had the natural gas companies, Antero Resources, beating out ExxonMobil. So pretty interesting setup as we head into the next phase of the first round. But that was yesterday was the new economy. Today was the old economy. Tomorrow we head into income region. The income region is up next for tomorrow's market. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and here is what we have time permitting. Our main focus point is about how much you're paying your financial advisor. Give you a breakdown of the types of advisors that are out there, where we fit in, and kind of the pros and cons of each type. Okay, and then designations. There's various designations that you can get as well. So we'll look at that story. In addition, I want to touch a bit on the household and what you're seeing from retail sales, for example, what the recent data is telling us about the average consumer. In addition, how exposed are foreign investors to the U.S. markets? What's their allocation compared to history? So we'll look at that. And then lastly, if we have time, there's been a large drawdown in equity allocation in just the past few weeks. A lot bigger than normal for the level of volatility. So we'll look at that survey as well. But ultimately, this hour is about you and your questions, and we will get to voice bank calls. One is on just investing strategy in general, and then we'll get some questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, your live calls are most important at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, gotta get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still gotta be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Let me touch on a topic that most listeners need to understand. I want to talk about creating a trust and a will. Until recently, this has been a very slow and time-consuming process. Things have changed now because trust and will makes creating your will easy. And before I go further, let me pass along the news that you can get 10% off at trustandwill.com/invest. Listen, I know from personal experience that the peace of mind that comes from having one's wishes and assets secure is a good feeling. And once you get your trust and will squared away, you can focus on the other important tasks in your life, whether they are for business or fun. When you work with Trust and Will, each will or trust is state-specific, legally valid, and customized to your needs. Their simple step-by-step process guides you from start to finish, one question at a time. You'll be able to keep your family prepared and protected by managing your will or trust online. Uncomplicate the process with Trust and Will. Protect what matters most in minutes at trustandwill.com/invest and get 10% off plus free shipping. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/invest.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, our main focus point is about advisor fees. And there's different ways that you can engage with advisors, different types of advisors out there. And I think it's very important whether you are using one now, don't think you'll ever use one. I think it's very important to understand the playing field here. And I think every type of advisor is appropriate for certain people. Okay. And so I'll give you a broad overview of the types, but actually, let me do that now. So there's about five different ways that advisors can operate. Okay. Now there's two main categories. One are fee only And the others fee-based. So fee only, we're fee only. This is where you only receive payments from the client for their services. Don't receive any commissions, kickbacks, incentives, or anything like that. That's fee only. Fee-based is your client probably pays a fee, but you also collect commissions or kickbacks of some kind. So usually if you're working, if you have a Series 7, for example, Series 6, I think is the insurance one. Those are where you can sell commission products. You're talking about mutual funds that have loads or commissions on them. You can private investments, private REITs, private placements, things like that. And that's fee-based. The difference is typically one is a fiduciary and one isn't, which I'll get into in a little bit what fiduciary means. But ultimately, it comes down to five different types. One is assets under management fee. So usually a percentage, anywhere from 0.5 to 2% in total annually. That's how we operate at KPP, just a heads up. There's also your robo-advisors. Their fee is going to be a lot lower, anywhere from 0.25 to 1% annually, but you don't have the personalized guidance, okay? So you're going to pay a higher percentage to talk to a person to have personalized guidance, okay? And then there's flat fees. These generally are, you know, can vary between 1,000, 3,000, maybe even more, depending on a complex situation. But those are kind of more set it and forget it plans. My issue with that is always most people's plans change, life changes over time. And so you might be going back to the well and paying those flat fees on a regular basis. And same with hourly, that can happen as well. We were building a financial plan and you're doing debt management, tax strategy, social security, claiming strategies, estate planning, all of that. Once again, goes up with how complex the situation is. And when things change, you have to go back and pay those hourly fees. You can also have an annual retainer. Now that's typically for those that have multi-million dollars. You're talking about usually that's like a family office situation. They're paying 5, 10, sometimes well over that every single year for, you know, general advice. Okay. Now, what is the average amount people pay? For on a percentage basis, the average fee is 1.05%. This is coming from State of Financial Planning from InvestNet, okay? And this is a study from InvestNet. The average fixed percentage fee for a human advisor, not a robo-advisor, 1.05%. That is average. Annual retainer, $4,500 roughly. Hourly rate, $268 per hour, and a per plan fee, just building a financial plan, give it to that client and you don't talk to them again, that's about $2,500. So those are the average cost there. Now, how do you evaluate an advisor? First is obviously checking credentials. You know, do they have a CFP, CFA, Series 65, Series 7? What are their designations? And then what is their experience? How long they've been doing it? And are their expertise aligned with yours? Right? So for example, we tend to be more value investors. We tend to focus on companies that have good cash flow, good balance sheets, great business longer term, et cetera, trading at reasonable valuations. If a client comes to us and says, I want you to buy, you know, all tech stocks, that's probably not a good fit for us, right? So it just depends on how you would like to invest, how you would like to, what areas you need help with. Is it tax? Is it just building a plan? Is it, you know, something around your business planning, etc.? And then understand the fee structure. I kind of laid out what those are for you, but make sure that that is aligned. Make sure that their incentives are aligned. One of the issues I have with kind of the big brokers that have Series 7, that have insurance licenses and the collecting commissions is you never know what hat they're wearing. You never know if they're wearing their commission hat or their advisor hat. And that goes to fiduciary status. Are they a fiduciary? When an advisor has a Series 7, has an insurance license, can do all these other things, and it sounds great, problem is that you never know what hat they're wearing. Are they wearing the fiduciary hat, as a registered investment advisor like us, we have our Series 65. Are they wearing that hat, or are they wearing the broker hat where they're collecting commissions and they're under a different standard that is not fiduciary standard? Okay. So that's the big question. Are they fee-based or are they fee-only? I would recommend fee-only. Then designations, you have CFP, you have CHFC, which is the Chartered Financial Consultant. CFP is Certified Financial Planner. Chartered Financial Analyst, and then there's Certified Investment Counselor, and then there's the Registered Investment Advisor. I would say the easiest is CFP. They're not giving you ongoing investment advice. They're just telling you to, here's your allocation, and this is how you should have your allocation. And then they'll send you to a CPA for your taxes and a trust attorney for your trust and build a plan for you. And that's kind of it, right? They're not doing the investments. They're just building a plan. And then from there, you get more and more sophisticated in the training when it comes to the investment side. Okay. So that is an overview of my space, my area. And once again, whether you're using a advisor or not, this is an area that at some point in your life, you probably will want to engage with one. May not seem like that now, especially if your situation's relatively simple. You have a job, maybe you have a house, you know, maybe you have just a spouse, no kids, maybe you have kids, but either way, it is a simple setup. Still, over time, your life will get more complex financially, and you will probably need to engage with one. So hopefully I gave you a good overview of how to think about if you are going to hire a financial advisor. Now we're going to a short break, and on the other side, I'll touch briefly on today's market activity and then play more of your questions here on Invest Talk. My phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions now at 888-99-CHART.
About how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a look at the market today. It was a nice green day overall. It was Fed day, and we rallied post-Fed announcement. But we did fade off the 5,700 level, which was resistance on the S&P. So we closed right at 5,675, up a little over 1%. The NASDAQ closed up 1.3%, really driven by Tesla up 4.6% after being pretty weak as of late. NVIDIA up 1.8%, Google up 2%. And really only the health sector was struggling. Everything else was pretty positive overall. Energy continued to be positive, and even retail had a nice rebound there. But it was all about the Fed announcement. And what did we get from the Fed? Well, we got really a dovish announcement. We know that they weren't going to change rates, but they did announce QT reductions. Now, QT is them allowing maturing securities up to a certain dollar amount to roll off their balance sheet, effectively shrinking their balance sheet and forcing the private market to hold those assets on their balance sheet. Okay, so what that does when they do QT is it shrinks the balance sheet capacity of the private sector. Okay, and ultimately, if they do that too much and amount of reserves in the system go too low, you could have a Silicon Valley bank crisis, for example. So they clearly see this as a threat, and they are starting to unwind it. So right now, they are allowing $25 billion of Treasury securities to roll off per month, and $35 billion of mortgage-backed securities. Well, they're keeping the amount of mortgage-backed securities cap at $35 billion roll-off. But they're lowering the Treasury roll-off to $5 billion from $25 billion. So it's slowing the drop in their balance sheet by $20 billion per month. Okay, so this is the process of them ending QT. I'm assuming the next move would probably be getting rid of Treasury roll-off and reducing mortgage-backed securities to maybe $25 billion, for example, and then slowly moving out of that over time. So that was the area that I think was received positively by markets, that, hey, they're looking to keep their balance sheet or reduce their balance sheet runoff, and that is net-net positive for liquidity. Then they looked at the economic projections, and it looks like economic growth for this year is expected to be 1.7% from 2.1% the last time they had a meeting. So clearly they're seeing deteriorations in the economy, and so their expectations for economic growth are lower. And for next year, down from 2 to 1.8%. So the Fed, Federal Reserve Board, they see economic growth slowing this year and next year. And they see inflation actually accelerating. So PCE expected to go from 2.5 to 2.7, and core PCE going from 2.5 to 2.8. Now, they had one dissenter. That was Christopher Waller. He wanted to keep QT static. Everyone else agreed with reducing it. So overall, the economic outlook uncertainty has increased, and the market actually liked that. That the Fed was acknowledging the near-term challenges in the harder data, in sentiment, and obviously the pullback in markets. So ultimately, they were big fans of what the Fed was doing, what they did for this meeting. Now, this is likely going to create more upside in the near term. I do think we continue to get a bounce. This is OPEX week. So usually as you get into OPEX, which will be Friday, day after tomorrow, you get a trend change. And because there's roll-off of we call it gamma hedging, and when the market's down, the gamma hedging is reversing shorts, versus when the market's up, it's selling longs. And so I think there could be a short covering rally in the near term that could drive the S&P up into the 2058, 5900 range over the coming, you know, days and weeks. Is that going to be the end all of this the sell-off? Probably not. Usually in these pullbacks in markets, you get kind of an ABC pattern where you get the initial A leg down. We just finished that. Now we're getting that B leg bounce, and then you usually get another C leg lower before everything kind of refreshes and sentiment gets refreshed for that next move higher. Now, sentiment has moved down pretty dramatically, pretty quickly. So there is an argument here that this is overdone, that you get a reasonable bounce, especially if the tariffs, which are expected to go in effect in the beginning of April, if those are changed again, right? We know Trump is notorious for saying one thing and then acting tough and then suddenly backing off and giving exemptions to tariffs or reducing them or not even doing them at all or kicking the can down the road for another month. And maybe that's what happened, right? We've already had really two can kicks over the past 2 months. So does that happen again? And if it does, then the market will probably rally on that. So very interesting kind of time, especially between now and the end of the month. Most likely you get a choppied up period before you get a resolution to those tariffs, and then we'll know more. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story. Social Security's uncertain future sparks debate over privatization. As Social Security faces funding challenges, some experts argue privatization could offer higher returns, while critics warn it risks undermining the program's safety and predictability. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Life in general can be chaotic, right? Especially if you have an e-commerce business. And that gets us to order fulfillment. Now, the good news, you can calm the chaos of order fulfillment with the shipping software solution that delivers. ShipStation. I can tell you this. It feels great to be able to save serious money on shipping expenses by taking advantage of industry-leading discounts. ShipStation is the fastest, most affordable way to ship products to your customers while your e-commerce business enjoys discounts of up to 88% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates, and up to 90% on FedEx rates. ShipStation seamlessly integrates with the services and selling channels you already use, so you can manage orders on one easy dashboard. You'll ship more orders faster and automate your workflow to reduce human error and create 15 times more labels per hour. So, deliver a better customer experience with industry-leading, scalable features that help ensure accuracy and provide automated tracking updates with your company's branding. Calm the chaos of order fulfillment with the shipping software that delivers for you. Switch to ShipStation today. Go to ShipStation.com and use code INVEST to sign up for your free trial. That's ShipStation.com, code INVEST.
The markets react to uncertainty. Are you prepared? Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Your financial future depends on the answers to those questions. Justin Klein is here now and ready to talk with you. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, InvestTalk, Bill from Philadelphia. Calling about ticker symbol IIPR, Innovative Industrial Properties. Wanted to get your thoughts on where they're at right now. I think it's about 68, 69 level. Thinking of opening a position. I know about three or four months ago it was up at that 125 area. So I thought this might be a good time to start a position and collect that dividend. Wanted to get your thoughts. Thanks so much on what you do.
All right, looking at IIPR, Innovative Industrial Properties, a name we own for clients, and we still like this name longer term. Now, they had some recent issues because their biggest tenant was having some financial difficulties and defaulted on their leases. But they've recently come to an amendment agreement on that, and we think that will, over time, iron itself out. And you know, the market has acted like those properties are gone. In reality, they were, you know, just slightly impaired, or at least the leases were, and you know, they were either going to come to some resolution or they were going to kick them out and release them, and there's still value there. And so I think the market has overreacted. And so I do think this is a good time to continue to buy IPR. In fact, they think so. They just initiated a $100 million buyback program on a $1.8 billion market cap. So that's over 5% of their market cap. And they certainly have the cash flow and balance sheet to do that. If you look at their debt, very minimal, about $200 million in net debt on a $1.8 billion market cap. They have free cash flow of $258 million. So, you know, their debt is equal, total debt is equal to about their free cash flow for a year. So we see no issues there. Once again, they are looking to buy back shares, and I think it's a great opportunity if you're looking to get in the cannabis space, and that's what they do. They lease out these medical cannabis facilities, grow facilities, dispensaries, etc. And we think that's long-term a great place to be. Okay. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime on normal podcast platforms, but you can also find on our YouTube channel as well in video form. And we get questions via the comment section over there. And so let's answer one of those questions now. Mark Berlini says, I was looking at my investment portfolio containing mostly U.S.-based companies. I then thought many of the U.S. companies have major international sales, and I analyzed the Magic 7 companies, researching the American sales versus international over the last 5 years and determining the Magic 7 and the 50% American and 50% international. If I want to make sure I have international exposure and the S&P 500 is an index proxy, isn't it reasonable to assume many of the companies have exposure international and adding more international funds might overweight my portfolio in international? This is a great question because historically I might say yes, and yes, there's definitely some international exposure from a sales perspective. in these in the S&P 500 in general. So yes, that is true. But when it comes to portfolio allocation and money flow, what's happening now has nothing to do with their business exposure. It has to do with the money flow into particular economies. And underweights, being overweight US companies and underweight foreign companies and foreign equity exposure directly. And that's what's happened here. And that's what's starting to reverse. So yes, from an earnings perspective, you could call it that, but that's not what the shift that's happening right now is. It's money flowing directly to these foreign companies that are listed on, they list on our exchange, but domiciled in foreign countries. Think of like the Babas of the world. Or you're buying those foreign stocks directly on other exchanges. And that's what's happening now. It's not about a business exposure. It's about a amount of exposure that generally investors around the world have to U.S. indices, U.S. companies directly versus the rest of the world. And what I think is happening, and historically, when the dollar weakens considerably, those foreign investors, they are now losing money. Before, they were making money. Not only were they getting currency appreciation because they were basically owning dollars, dollar-denominated assets, like the Mag 7, like the S&P 500. So they're getting currency appreciation, and they were getting, the growth. But what happens when the dollar weakens, now they're no longer getting that. They're no longer getting that currency appreciation. They're getting currency depreciation. So the growth in profits and the price of the stock has to make up for that. And more often than not, when the dollar's in a downturn, they sell. They reduce their positioning. Okay. And that's part of what is happening right now. So as long as the dollar is weak, I think the S&P in general, especially those Mag 7 names, will continue to be weak. So that's what you have to think about. It's not about business exposure. It's about the exposure that individuals and institutions around the world have to U.S. equities versus those foreign stocks. Thanks for the question. Let's talk about the consumer. And we had a report on Monday, retail sales for the month of February. And there was some interesting, hard data. What we've seen since the Trump was inaugurated is a lot of sentiment data that has been negative. Now, one issue with sentiment data, we call that soft data. And one problem with that is that there, especially in today's polarized world, and we saw this when Biden was president, is if a Democrat's in the White House and you're polling a Republican, they're going to be not as happy about the overall economy, and they'll say how bad things are. And vice versa, right? A lot of Democrats are talking about how bad things are and bad the economy is because Trump is in the White House. And that is, we're as polarized, as we've almost ever been. But what they say in a soft data survey oftentimes doesn't manifest. It's more of a political bias thing than a real boots on the ground action. But this retail sales is starting to finally actually match some of those surveys. You saw a slowdown in spending on optional categories, restaurant meals mainly, and it wasn't just lower income consumers as well. It's middle and upper income consumers on top of that. We've seen weakness from lower end consumers for a while. So other categories that were weak, furniture, sporting goods, apparel, they were all weaker because people spent more money on non-discretionary items. Maybe eggs? Just joking. But that's what you've seen. Now, the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now tracker previously had retail sales estimates for this quarter, 1.1%. Now it's only 0.4%. So still positive, but you're talking about a third of what it was just a few weeks ago. And then you look at lending conditions. And this is something you want to continue to watch. I always watch it, is what is happening, and I'll pull this up here. Bank credit. So if you're watching on YouTube, you might see this chart here, and it's the year-over-year change in bank credit. Now, this peaked out back in November at around 4% year-over-year, and it's kind of stagnated now. And it's going sideways. It's not terrible, but it's certainly something I'm watching. It's now at about 3.4%. So it's taken a small step lower. The overall trend is still higher, but that is something I'm watching, is our credit conditions tightening to a major degree. What you're seeing is loan rejections are headed higher, and the overall availability of credit looks to be stagnating. This is according to the New York Fed. And the overall Fed Financial Conditions Index has also tightened modestly over the past 2 months. And that's with the dollar weakening. Typically, the dollar weakening is good for financial conditions. But you're seeing credit spreads widening out a bit, and that is overall something to watch. Now, it's not, once again, not at a worrying level, but it's starting to say, okay, where are we? Are we really headed for a recession? And the market has not priced that in yet. What the market has priced in is a stair step lower in economic growth, but not recessionary quite yet. Now, one thing that's interesting about this recent drop in equities is that our economy, because it's so, we call it K-shaped, where lower end consumer not doing well, middle upper class consumer, they tend to do well. You own assets, you own a home, you own equities, you're probably doing well. But when you have, and that's been the driver of spending, especially the boomer generation, they're retiring with, you know, equity sky high valuations, equity in their home sky high amounts. And so they have been the big drivers of spending. So if they see this setback in the S&P, and, you know, and obviously those big Mag 7 names are very heavily owned, this could be a catalyst for them to truly pull back on spending. And that's kind of the biggest worry here. So that was the takeaway from the consumer spending report that we saw on Monday. Now let's fit in another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is Jack in North Carolina. I was looking at a company, Trex, ticker symbol TREX. They make alternative wood products, primarily for decks and fencing, and thinking of, you know, your kind of home remodeling statement that you were talking about a few days ago, looking at that sector. I didn't know if like this, you would consider this to be part of that with alternative woods and people redoing decks. Yeah, I think if now would be a good time to get in. It's gotten pretty beat up over the last year, so I want to see what your thoughts are. Again, Trex, and look forward to listening to it on the podcast. Thanks.
All right. Yeah, look at TREX. They manufacture wooden alternative decking products. Like you said, fences, rails, porches, decking, etc. And they mainly focus on selling to contractors and professional contractors, remodelers, and home builders. So pretty diversified there, which I really like. And if you look at the size of the business, $4.3 billion market cap, very little debt, great balance sheet here. The issue, though, is that free cash flow has turned negative. Now, historically, this does vacillate up and down, so I don't love that. But let me take a look at earnings. Yeah, earnings does once again vacillate up and down. Earnings are expected to be up 5% this year, 14% next year, but it's trading at $59 per share, and it's a $2.50 stock. Sorry, $59 per share, and it's supposed to earn $2.50 next year. So that's a mid-20s multiple. That's pretty high for a business that is meandering here just a bit. So I don't love that. Let's take a look at their profitability. Return equity is 27%. I do like that. Historically, it tends to be around 30%. So high return on equity, high return on invested capital, no dividend yield here. I'm assuming they're taking their cash flow when they do have nice positive cash flow. They're buying back shares. Yep, that's exactly what they're doing. Back in 2013, they had 137 million shares outstanding. Now they only have 107 million shares outstanding. So over the last dozen years or so, they bought back about 30 million of their 137 million shares. So they're using that cash flow in a smart way, I will say that. Let's take a look at the chart here. So this is actually at some pretty good long-term support, right at the 100-week moving average. It's starting to find some strength there. I actually kind of like this chart now. I was looking at TEX versus TREX. And yeah, this one, I like it from that perspective. So I give it a lukewarm thumbs up. I worry a bit about the valuation and that free cash flow, but historically that free cash flow has bounced back, and they are smart with that cash flow and they do buy back shares. So I'll give it a modest thumbs up. Now we got time to fit in another listener question from our YouTube channel. And Jeremy Meyer says, go grocery outlet, bargain market dropped about 30%. I've been watching it for a long time. IPO'd in 2019. Shopping there has been a great investment for me. Although it's been making money, it's dropped over 50% last year. Do you think it might be a good time to buy or a falling knife? All right, take a look at GO, grocery outlet. And with the price of groceries going up, people are looking for bargains, and GO is a place for that. I think they buy things that are kind of close to expiration. You get them cheaper, etc. So let's take a look at the profitability. Ooh. I don't like the trends here. Let me look at the balance sheet real quick, because that's what this is telling me, is that the balance sheet is impaired. No, not a ton of, a decent amount of debt. Negative free cash flow. I wouldn't touch this. I think it's in a strong downtrend, has a decent amount of debt on its balance sheet, negative free cash flow. I would pass on grocery outlet. Now we're heading into our final break, but I'm ready for your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Josh calling from the UK. I've been doing a lot of research on kind of just water recently, and I wanted to get your opinion between PHO and PIO. They are both very passively managed ETFs, and I just wanted to get your opinion on one versus the other there, and then kind of if there's anything specific about water now that is kind of worth sharing as I dig more into that. Thank you.
All right, looking at the Invesco Water Resources ETF, PHO or PIO, which is the global water ETF. Now, the PIO has a bit higher expense ratio, 75 basis points versus 59 basis points for the PHO. But I like, right now, I like global, I will say that. So I lean towards the global one. I like the foreign exposure here. It's about 50% non-US stocks and 50% US equities. The international one is 63% industrials. So a lot of people think that the investing in water, you're investing in utility companies, water utilities. Well, you know, that's not typically the case here. Only about 15% of PIO is in utilities and 11% of PHO. Now, once again, how much foreign exposure do you really want is the question. Do you want to add on that extra layer there? Water is essential for life. And a lot of people think we're short on water and there are water problems. You know, historically, you know, it sounds better than the reality of it. Now, is it bad to have some exposure here? No, I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing in the world. But I rather own a pure play industrial name, for example, or industrial ETF. I don't think you get an advantage because it's water in general. So let me look at the performance here. So for example, PIO, it's up about 5% this year, but that's because international. Last year it was down when the market was, you know, going gangbusters. And let me look at the PHO. That one is down slightly on the year, and it was up 8% last year. Versus, you know, the broader market was up over 20%. So, you know, it's okay. I don't love either one, but if I'm picking one, I'll pay the extra little fee to gain more foreign exposure because that's what I would use it for. Okay. Let's talk about this pullback in markets. And there is a Bank of America Global Research report, and it looks at sentiment. And allocations to U.S. stocks saw its biggest drop ever in March. Not a shock, considering the speed and magnitude of the drop of those Mag 7 names. Global investors raised their cash allocation to 4.1% from 3.5%. And the speed of that drop, that doesn't sound like a lot, but the speed of that drop in 1 month is typically consistent with the end of an equity correction, so capitulation. Now, does that mean it has to be? No. But usually you at least get a bounce, kind of what we're getting now. And it could be the start of a broader shift in asset markets, in leadership in the market. And I think that's the likely outcome. It's more of leadership changes within broader equities from a sector perspective, from, you know, small versus large, from foreign versus domestic, etc. Now, the allocation to Euro stocks, though, in March, was the highest since 2021. And what is the favorite sector worldwide? It's actually banks. And what they did was they surveyed 171 different participants that managed $426 billion. So this is looking at what professional managers are doing. It's not the average person. It's what all of these managers across the globe are thinking about doing. So I wanted to highlight that because while everything seems dire and everyone is kind of shaking in their boots, you're getting a sentiment refresh already. And it doesn't have to be a bear market. It could be a choppy period with a different leadership that broadens out beyond tech, for example. So that's our base case. Obviously, we'll keep you abreast as time goes on and see what trends continue to emerge. But those are the trends that are happening right now. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And keep in mind that we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number if you head over to investtalk.com and schedule a portfolio review with me. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.